It's you too, and I understand you're a record soccer crowd tops your sports report this evening.
Kim joining us once again on The Voice of America from Johannesburg to talk about that record soccer crowd is our African football guru, David Legg. Hello, David.
Tommy.
David, let's kick off in the U.S. city of Ann Arbor, Michigan. That's where a record crowd of 109,318 poured into Michigan Stadium over the weekend to watch Manchester United beat Real Madrid 3-1 in a friendly match between two of Europe's top clubs. It's the largest crowd ever to watch a soccer match here in the USA, David. What's your reaction to the record attendance, and how does it compare with some of the big games you've seen in Africa?
Yeah, Sonny, the minute I heard that fixture was coming, Real Madrid versus Manchester United, I said to myself, wherever they stage that match in the United States, it's going to be a sellout. And the figure is astounding, Sonny. It actually beats anything in Africa. And the best we can do here in Africa is 93,000 at the Soccer City Stadium, just a few kilometers from where I'm speaking to you. That's in Soweto. That was the venue for the 2010 World Cup final in which Spain beat the Netherlands. But that's the biggest stadium, Sonny, in Africa. We've got some other pretty big ones in Algiers, for example, 80,000. In Kinshasa, the Martyrs Stadium, 80,000. In Egypt, Sonny, the Cairo Stadium officially holds 73,000. But I believe larger crowds than that have squeezed their way in. And as we know only too well on the sunny side of sport, this sometimes is a major problem in Africa. Too many fans, too many extra fans getting into grounds. And then, of course, if something goes wrong, chaos, panic, and inevitably stampedes and deaths. Another big one, Sonny, the Tunisian National Stadium, they hold 60,000. But the Michigan crowd, isn't it amazing? It's Real Madrid and Manchester United. Manchester United coming off, by their standards, an awful season in which, of course, ended with their coach, David Moyes, being sacked and replaced by the Dutch coach, Louis van Gaal. But that power, that magnetism that draws people to watch them clearly is very much there in the United States. And I've watched, Sonny, I've stayed up late in South African time to watch these exhibition matches in various cities in the United States. And generally, they seem to be very well attended. Obviously, the performances of the USA at the World Cup in Brazil have rubbed off, and the interest is there. And that is great, Sonny, because I think for a healthy world game in football, you need the United States to be involved.
David, as we talk, most of Africa's heads of state are here in Washington for an African Leaders Summit hosted by U.S. President Barack Obama.
Hello, everybody.
I would imagine one of the topics of discussion is the deadly Ebola outbreak in West Africa. David, what impact does Ebola have on African football?
Well, so far, Sonny, not too much, thankfully, but I think things are about to get very serious. Let's just briefly go backwards. Seychelles last week, they decided not to admit the Sierra Leone team to their island in the Indian Ocean, and therefore they had to forfeit the tie. And it was really sad for people from the Seychelles because their national team had gone all the way across Africa to Sierra Leone. They put up a brave fight. They lost the match 2-0. And one of their football officials said that there was tremendous interest in the return match. They were clearly hopeful of overturning that two-goal disadvantage. Personally, Sonny, I think Sierra Leone would have qualified anyway, but this brought home what Ebola. At the moment, there's no cure for it, and that is the really frightening thing. Now, Sonny, there are four countries in Africa where deaths have been reported of late. They are Nigeria, Sierra Leone, Guinea, and Liberia. Now, Liberia are out of the 2015 Cup of Nations qualifiers. They were beaten by Lesotho. But Nigeria, Sierra Leone, and Guinea are very much involved. Nigeria are the defending champions. They had a bye into the group stage. So had Guinea. And Sierra Leone qualified by beating Swaziland and then getting that walkover over the Seychelles. Now, come sunny September 5 and 6, Nigeria are due to host Rwanda. Sierra Leone travels to Ivory Coast and Guinea host Togo. And then, just a few days later, on September the 10th, Nigeria are due to play in South Africa. Sierra Leone will be at home to the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Guinea travel to Uganda. And the questions are, first of all, will these countries that are affected, will they be allowed to host matches? And secondly, looking at the Seychelles issue, will they be able to travel into other countries? For example, will my country, South Africa, admit the Nigerians, fearful perhaps that some of those players might be affected by Ebola? It's scary, Sonny. And if the disease spreads to other countries, we could have chaos. Never since 1968, when the first qualifiers for the Cup of Nations were staged, have we had a situation like this one. Potentially, we're looking at major problems. In the sense, can Sierra Leone, Nigeria and Guinea host matches? Is it safe for them to host matches? And secondly, will other countries in the groups permit Guinea, Sierra Leone and Nigeria to travel to their countries? No word yet, Sonny, from CAF, but I'm sure we're going to hear from them very soon. They must be planning now because it's just about 4 weeks to go before these first matches at the group level.
Thanks, David. That's our African football guru, David Legg, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg, South Africa. In more African football news, Kenya has named Bobby Williamson the new head coach of the national team, the Harambee Stars. Williamson is from Glasgow, Scotland, the venue for the recent Commonwealth Games. And you might say the Kenya job is an early birthday present for the Scotsman, who'll celebrate his 53rd birthday next week. Now, Williamson has been coaching in East Africa since 2008, when he was appointed head coach of Uganda's national team, the Cranes. He was sacked by the Ugandans in April 2013. And for the past year, he's been in charge of the Kenyan club Gor Mahia, which is based in Nairobi. Bobby Williamson takes over from Adel Amrouche, an Algerian who was fired by the Kenya Football Federation 2 days ago following Kenya's 1-0 aggregate loss to Lesotho in a 2015 Africa Cup of Nations qualifying series. Meanwhile, the Kenyans have also named the country's most capped player, Musa Otero Otieno, as an assistant to Williamson, and another former international player for Kenya, Simon Mulama, has been named team manager. Kenya yaleo, Kenya yaleo, usipoka sana, atakufa masikini. Kenya yaleo, haipendi uvivu, usipoka sana, atakufa masikini. Kenya yaleo, Kenya yaleo, usipoka sana. Turning to tennis, Africa's highest-ranked men's player, Kevin Anderson of South Africa, survived a first-round scare at the Rogers Cup in Toronto, Canada, where he eventually beat young Australian qualifier Tanasi Kokkinakis in 3 sets. The match in Toronto was interrupted 4 times by heavy rain showers. In a post-match interview with reporter Kirsten Lonsdale, Anderson admitted he was rattled by his opponent, who just broke into the world's top 200.
It was a really tough match. Quite a lot of factors to deal with. Most of all was my opponent. He was playing really good tennis. He's a youngster, and sometimes it's a little tough coming out and playing something like that. Who's swinging out quite freely, and he's got a very lively arm, good serve, good forehand, and there's some of the building blocks, to being a very tough tennis player. And I think definitely you'll see more of him to come. And added to that, obviously the rain delays, stopped me starting. It was like 4 times today, and I'm really happy with the way I came out, my energy levels at the end, and feeling healthy as well. And that's always a tough aspect. So overall, I'm very happy with today's match.
What do you think was the difference? Was it just experience in the end?
Yeah, I think, you know, coming off to the first set, it was, you know, I was a little rattled and a little, I was beating myself up a little bit, but, you know, came back in the second, and, you know, it was funny, like, even in the first set, I thought I was serving well. He was just taking some big cracks on my serve. I don't think I've, you know, lost that many first serve points when I've, you know, actually serving a pretty high percentage, and managed to get that break and gain confidence. And I think it was a lesson for myself to learn as well. You know, just I think it was a good example of how I want to compete.
That's South African tennis player Kevin Anderson. And Kevin was talking with reporter Kirsten Lonsdale in Toronto, Canada, the venue for this week's Rogers Cup hardcourt tournament. Kevin is ranked number 21 in the world in the latest men's tennis rankings. That's the highest position of any African player. Meanwhile, the ATP Tour, the governing body for men's professional tennis, says the inaugural Israel Open in Tel Aviv has been canceled because of security concerns arising from the military conflict in the region. The tournament was scheduled to be held from September 15th to September 21st. It would have been the first ATP event held in Israel since 1996. Follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. Here in Washington, U.S. President Barack Obama is hosting an African Leaders Summit this week. Do you think sports has been a neglected topic during these summits by African leaders as a way to develop the continent? Tweet me your comments or post them at my Facebook page, and I might read your remarks during the show later this week. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to Yehias Wuhib and Kim.